Hello, Dreamers. It's Janine.
And Stephanie.
And this is The Course of Course, episode 45. Wow, we're just moving along here.
We are.
So, Stephanie, let's just jump right in. I know that we've discussed kind of some issues we've been having. Some of them are similar to each other. Some of them are slightly different. But one of the things I want to talk about is our jobs. We're both going through a bit of a journey in our current occupations.
I feel like I've been having a dark period, and it has been intense and difficult. Although I woke up yesterday and I feel like, woo, something shifted. I feel lighter now.
You got through the darkness.
Yeah, which is good. But I think what happened was a couple nights ago, I got really clear that I no longer need to have my identity attached to my job.
I think that's huge.
You know, I don't need my ego to get the little good jobs, or like, I don't care if you want to take away part of my job and give it to someone else. Like, I just don't care anymore.
We're both in that situation. I feel very detached now. It's funny. I don't know if that's just a consequence of age for us, or we just got to the point where it no longer served us being so identified to our job and our career. I just don't really have that anymore. I'm attached to the money, but I'm not necessarily attached to what I'm doing anymore. I've been so wrapped up in the ego part of it. So I've talked in previous podcasts about how I want to get promoted and all this kind of stuff. I've completely given up all of that. I don't care. Mm-hmm. And not in necessarily a bad way, like I don't care if you can die or whatever.
Right.
For me, it's just like, all right, well, what do I have to do today? That's fantastic. I'm just going to go home and live my life then.
I feel like the stress levels are so off the chart, and there's so much breakdown in the communication and the structure of our company that I just no longer want to participate in their game.
We are definitely moving to a different phase, I think, in our lives in terms of, you know, making money. And I feel like it's freeing. I'm no longer somebody who would say, hi, I'm a attorney, I'm a doctor. I no longer identify with what I do anymore.
I am kind of gearing up towards, in the next year, where would I like to move to, and what would I do to sustain myself? And there's definitely some unknowns, and I don't feel too pressured about having to figure it out quite yet. I do feel like I have a lot of talents, and I'm not sure which one to focus on.
We had talked earlier that we did not recognize this or realize this before, because we've both been going through this sort of dark night of the soul in terms of career, that it looks like we are going through our Saturn return.
This is true. Our second one.
Our second Saturn return.
Together.
So, well, we're only, what, 14 days apart?
Yes.
Like, literally only 14 days apart, same year, same month. It's just an interesting kind of journey now that we're both experiencing sort of parallel situations.
I feel like what's helped me a lot in the last couple of weeks, I've been doing a marathon of the 24th hour.
Jackie Laura Jones.
There's been a bunch of different spiritual buffet type ideas as the interviewees. Anything from sound to, you know, singing voice to rhythms and drums and colors and codes and reincarnation to Gary's on there a couple of times, to a lady who talked with pets and helps owners. And the music stuff, I went online and I downloaded some music, and I feel like that's helped me a lot to kind of give me some peace as soon as I come through the door at home at night. I just want to kind of detach from the day and give it over to the Holy Spirit. So I do my meditation, but the music's been helping me a lot. And I have to say, even though there is a spiritual buffet, I think there are some pieces or some expressions of it that could be helpful.
No, and I agree.
I've been finding help through that.
I think that from a spiritual buffet perspective, there's a part of me that has already felt like I've done it, been there, done that. Go to psychic fairs and psychic bookstores.
Yeah, that
and
I'm not interested.
Right, and we would buy crystals and all of that stuff. Although, interesting, it's really kind of like gotten to the point where I see them as trinkets, or I see them as, you know, what does the course talk about? They're just magic.
Probably.
Yeah. Which is fine, and there's nothing wrong with them. It's just I feel like, and I don't know if this is ego saying this, but I feel like I've kind of matured. I've matured spiritually.
I agree. I think because we know none of it's real, we don't need to get bogged down in other ideas that can pull us off track and And it's just another device of the ego at that point. It's yes. just another spin cycle and a different expression.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, I love rocks. I love crystals. I like healing. Like, I'm thinking a lot about healing the mind and healing the Son of God. And it's like, if I could somehow have a little more peace in myself through a vibration that comes through music or through a rock, I'll take anything at this point.
Yeah, whatever helps us pull that out is fine. I just no longer see it as magical in its properties. Like, oh, I have to get these runes, or, you know, I need to get a tarot reading. I'm just not there anymore.
Yes.
I kind of don't. There's a part of me that's like, okay, so I can go to a psychic and they can tell me stuff. But the other part of me is like, well, I feel like from a course perspective, the script is already written. I'm no longer attached to what a psychic may say about my future. I mean, they may be reading the script, I don't know, but it will unfold as it unfolds.
And all we have to do is just keep giving it over.
Just keep giving it over and keep forgiving that which is in front of us every day.
And feeling love and being extension of God and turning the illusions over.
I wonder if this phase we're going through where we're feeling more disconnected is a positive thing. I don't know. I'm kind of like, well, it's working for me. But it's strange because my ego is so strong in terms of connecting and feeling like something is over me and, you know, controlling me or whatever, and that I have to be attached to it. I have to do what I can to have a great career. I literally could care less now. Maybe 10 years ago, I'd be like, oh no, I need to work up the corporate ladder. But what does it really mean? I feel like it was coming to me from outside of myself and not inside myself.
That's a good distinction, because the world isn't really who we want to follow.
And the weird thing is, I was thinking about the people I most admire in a company, and it's not the executives, it's not the leadership at all. It's the people who make me laugh. It's the people who are just kind human beings.
Mm-hmm.
That now is my standard. It is not, oh, that's an executive VP, I want to be like them. I don't. We will have these meetings at my company where we'd have people come in and they talk about, well, what's your brand and how can you do better at selling yourself? And I'm like, whatever. I don't. I have no interest. Mm-hmm. I just don't. And now I'm starting to get, well, is this a problem? It's working. But it's against everything I've ever believed in previously.
I definitely feel like change is happening, and that in the next year to year and a half, I'll probably leave LA and do something. I don't know where. I don't know what. That's the unknown that still will reveal itself.
What's the motivation for leaving Los Angeles?
Too much traffic, too much stress, big city. I want a whole different experience. It's about feeling an experience, and it's just too revved up here.
I think that the great parts of Los Angeles are that you can make a really good living, but the negative parts about Los Angeles is you can make a really good living and not experience it because you're around traffic and people and stress. It's like bizarre, right? It's like this mirage. We're going to give you a lot of money, but you may be miserable if you take it.
Yeah, I had to work last Saturday unexpectedly. I have to work tomorrow, which is another Saturday. I worked a Saturday recently, and I just feel like, you know, they're starting to say I have to work a lot of Saturdays because that's when people are available, and I'm not getting comp days. I'm not getting paid. I just kind of feel like I don't fit into that structure anymore. It doesn't work for me.
I wonder if I could create my own career, what it would look like. And it would be talking about the course, whether it's just like in a casual situation with people or whether if it's teaching. I would want to be around people who are very creative and very funny. I would want to have my days filled with joy and laughter. And when I go to bed at night, go, oh, this is a great day. Because I cannot honestly say I could go to bed and say this is a great day in a while.
I definitely feel that the garden brings me a lot of upliftment and helps kind of heal my soul and my body spirit. And if it wasn't for the garden right now and music and my meditation, that's definitely helping me a lot.
That's the thing. We all have these salvations in our life, whether it's gardening or cooking or whatever. It's remembering them.
Mm-hmm.
It's very easy to get pulled away and say, oh, my job is terrible. And, you know, my boyfriend doesn't pay attention to me, blah, blah, blah. It's just really a matter of focus. Like, what are we focusing on? I'm definitely going through this period where I'm kind of not caring about stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, if it happens, it happens. If it doesn't, it doesn't. I don't remember feeling this way before, and I don't know where this is coming from. I do know that in some ways it's very freeing for me to not be as attached to other people's perception of me at work. I don't care. I don't care if somebody says, oh, no, she's whatever. It's your opinion.
Sure.
You can own it.
That's great.
But because it's so different from basically my entire adult life,
right.
It's a little unsettling. If you're not used to it, it's like that whole thing of I'm afraid because I don't know what it means. But I guess I'm just going to play it out, see how it happens. A friend of mine texted me and said, how do you feel about a certain situation? I'm like, I don't know. I'm just going to let it happen. And her response was, oh, I didn't think about that. We always keep trying with our ego to affect things and change things and fix things. The bigger picture, you can't. It's already done. It's already scripted.
So your company was recently purchased by a top 10 company.
Mm-hmm.
And my company is pretty big as well. And they're looking at laying off a whole bunch of people. So it's like both jobs are going to have to do cutbacks.
Mm-hmm.
And we both wish that we were on the hit list. And
right.
We both
it's like,
aren't.
Because a lot of companies offer kind of like a goodbye packages. Like, we'll give you X amount of dollars if you take an early retirement or decide to leave voluntarily. It's like, well, where's my money?
Yeah. I wish I was on that hit list because I'd get 2 years worth of salary.
It's fascinating, isn't it? I mean, the ones who don't want to leave get it, and the ones who do want to leave don't.
Yeah. It is weird. Very well, strange. Since I've been relying a lot on meditation this last couple of, like, month or so, since January, to heal myself, I've been reading the text and the quiet answer, which to me kind of comes through meditation. It talks here about the holy instant is the interval in which the mind is still enough to hear the answer. It is here that all your problems should be brought and left.
Wow.
Here they belong, for here the answer is.
I love the concept of the holy instant. Yeah. There are instances in our life, basically our life are just full of them, a successive amount of instances that are all holy if we just see them that way.
If only we did, we wouldn't be here. Mm-hmm. Of these illusions, which of them are true? Which ones establish peace and offer joy? Which is kind of what you were saying. If I'm feeling joyful, then this is something I want to be doing. But if I'm not feeling so joyful, then you kind of wonder, like, what am I doing here?
I feel like money comes into play, right? So money is also a consequence of ego.
Mm-hmm.
But I would feel joyful sitting in my fat pants, watching TV, watching like reality TV, and like eating Raisinets. That would be joyful for me. That doesn't necessarily mean that it would help me in terms of making any money, or, you know, you can only do that for so long.
Right.
But when I think of moments of joy, it's like being completely comfortable, doing what I want to do, and relaxing.
Well, that's pretty cool. When I was listening to the Kevin Ryerson on the 24th Hour, he has two episodes on that. And one of them was talking about the function at my peak potential. And it was thinking of a moment when you felt really, really good. And thinking of that moment just before you go to sleep. And he was talking about how it sets a tone or a note off into the universe. And then I always think of my forgotten song and all my sacred sounds and how I love music and imagining this whole orchestra playing. And he was saying, if you can think about that before you go to sleep and the first thing when you wake up and then throughout the day, it can kind of just help remind us who we are and, again, build that bridge back to heaven. And I think it's like that muscle of remembering.
That's a really good idea. So before we go to sleep, we think about these moments we had that was joyful. And then when we wake up, we remember those.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really good idea.
And then throughout the day, as much as you can. He was also talking when Jackie was asking him about following your soul path and making changes, because a lot of people, I think, come to her who are in a kind of where we are, like we're looking at a career change and some changes. And he was saying that he was talking about fear, the fear that comes with that, that fear itself constitutes the ability to feel concern. If you shift from what am I afraid of, which will conjure up images of what you call the boogeyman, and said instead, what are my deep concerns? Why am I feeling this concern? With that question alone, you will begin to see in your dreams and in your visions the interconnected patterns of life into the web in which you yourself can be effective in the world.
That's great.
That just really spoke to me. Mm-hmm. And I just kept listening to it over and over until I could write it down and then come back and look at it. And then you know, read it right now, but that is interesting. You know, what are my concerns instead of what am I afraid of? Because I always am thinking of the boogeyman, and that's from the ego point of view. But the other side is more from the Holy Spirit point of view, and I think just giving it over.
I keep trying to remember to bring the Holy Spirit into my day, but as we both know, it's easy to get distracted mm-hmm. by events at work or ego or whatever. So when I'm around somebody that I don't really resonate with and I ask the Holy Spirit to be with me in that moment, it does shift. The reality is I forget to do it more often than not. I feel like I want my iWatch to like give me a shock when I'm in a situation to remind myself, all right, hey, Holy Spirit, you're with me right now.
Maybe set a timer every hour.
That's not a bad idea.
That's one of the things we did doing the workbook.
It's not a bad idea. Just like remember the Holy Spirit. It is funny because my ego has been so looming large in my life for so long. When I get these opportunities to quiet it down, I don't do it long enough. So I'll think in that holy instant about the Holy Spirit, and then it's gone. But my ego, it gets a lot of attention from me. It gets the most attention from me than anything else.
Sure.
But I don't really want to give it as much attention anymore. It's just, I feel like it's one of those monsters that keeps wanting to eat. It's so hungry. Give me more, give me more.
Yeah, it's like the yeast wanting the sugar.
Except it's our ego.
Right. Listening to those high vibration musics and doing my meditation is what's saving me
right now.
Is this
the Stephen Halperin music?
Yeah. It's the like deep theta, I don't know what not. I just found something that out of the 30 CDs he had available, one that seemed to resonate for me.
Yeah, he's very prolific. Mm-hmm. He's been around for a while.
He sure has.
When we were at the Monroe Institute years ago when we were living in Virginia, that was really interesting because they do a lot with that kind of music and tone to try to get to that meditative state.
Yeah, the different right and left hemispheres and syncing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was much more sciencey mm-hmm. than more new agey kind of things. I like to add a Y at the end of stuff to make it new agey and sciencey.
It's like when I worked at the pub in London and they'd say, hey, California, get me a vodka and tonic. They added R's to the end of everything.
Yeah. Crazy place, this world, isn't it?
Yeah. Another thing that Kevin Ryerson said about Kundalini energy that I thought was interesting is that it's a coil in your intuition and it's the ability to feel concern because it anchors you in the moment of time and space and alerts you to the interconnected patterns of life and the natural flows and rhythms, and it alerts you and gradually enlightens you to your purpose in life. Now, I don't know that I want to be anchored into time and space.
I don't.
You know? It's like, that's what we're trying to transcend. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Sometimes when I meditate, I have a lot of energy that comes up and it just stops. And it is kind of like, wow.
I remember when I first started meditating, probably back around the time we were at the ARE, I'm guessing. Well, it was earlier than that. It had to be earlier than that. And I felt like I was doing this meditation and I was kind of open to Kundalini energy, kind of moving up my spine. Mm-hmm. And it freaked me out so bad. I felt like my finger was in a light socket.
Yes.
It scared me so much I didn't do it again.
But I don't want that fear to stop me from meditating. Because mm-hmm. for me, meditation is my time to go within and be with God. Mm-hmm. And I feel like there's just something really delicious about just spending time with God.
It's one of the reasons why I love like sleeping and dream time. Like I love dreaming. Even if it's like not a great dream, I love the experience of it. I love waking up and going, oh yeah. But my boyfriend doesn't ever dream.
That he can remember.
That he can remember. Of course, everybody does. But he said, hey, I remembered a dream for one. Like the first time I've remembered a dream in a very long time. And I said, well, what was it? He said, this woman who he knew that died a couple years ago kept showing up. He said, I was like at a bakery and she showed up. She didn't say anything. I just recognized her. And then I'd go someplace else and there she was again. I was like, well, wow. You dreamt the first time you've remembered a dream in a very long time. It was like seeing somebody that you knew that passed away.
One of the other 24th hour podcasts was about reincarnation. And he was talking a lot about the kids that had been interviewed earlier with Ian Stevenson, who was a medical doctor. And he interviewed 2,500 kids under age 7. And all the rememberings that they had from addresses to aunts to uncles to names to gambling to alcoholism, like all kinds of interesting stuff.
Oh, the thing about reincarnation. So when my boyfriend was talking about his dream.
The thing was, is he was saying that a lot of times when someone's passed and it was maybe a little bit sooner than they thought, they'll come in a dream to the next family kind of saying, hey, I'm going to be coming through with you and get ready because I'm coming.
Interesting.
But there's something about the reincarnation. They said on the average, it's about 16 months.
It's fascinating.
That people come back. That's pretty quick.
I don't want to come back ever.
Yeah, me either.
The last thing I want is 16 months or like, oh yeah, you got to go back down. Uh-uh.
Mm-mm.
No.
Yeah. If we can clear up all that unconscious guilt that Gary talks about so that when we pass, we don't have that psychological guilt that draws us back into the body. Then we can maybe, hopefully, ascend once and for all.
If I come back in, I want it to be my choice. I mean, obviously, it's all of our choices, I guess, in some level. Mm. But I want it to be because I'm enlightened and I want to come down and help people. That's the only condition I can think I would want to come back down again. And again, coming back down is a construct as well. I mean, we don't come back down. That's the one thing. Well, there's many things about the Course that kind of blew my mind. But the concept that we were never really born. I love that. We were never really born into a body. This is all a dream. None of this is true. Mm-hmm. But we're so like connected to the idea of being born in a body. And then these bigger like social discussions about abortion and when does life begin? Really?
Mm-hmm.
When does life begin? It's begun. It's constant.
One of the neat things they were talking about in the reincarnation episode was that they found that people were changing religions from lifetime to lifetime. And that just spoke to me with the whole ISIS thing going on and them wanting to have world domination and the Muslim and the Islam and the Hindu and the Christian and all the different variations, and that we're all religions at one point. So why are we killing each other and having wars over religion?
Absolutely. When we were in graduate school, we took kind of comparative religion classes and learned more about different religions. I feel like I'm so disconnected and detached. I don't care. Like, I really don't. I have no, whatever, be Muslim, be right. Jewish, however you want to.
To me, like, it's all organized. I don't know. I have a problem with like organized religion.
Yeah, we were talking before about this concept of Jesus. It feels like Christianity and like the whole religious part of it has sort of co-opted the concept of Jesus. Like somehow they own Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
And we love Jesus completely different from a religious context. He's like, to me, he's the ideal. He is the embodiment of that which I would love to become. And I see him as kind of like the guiding light. But I was talking to my boyfriend about Jesus and he completely shut down on me. And I feel like I couldn't have that dialogue with him. But the reality is, that is me. It's an aspect of me. Mm. Jesus is an important kind of like figure in my life. Again, not from a religious context, because I don't really read religious texts anymore, nor do I really care about that. But Jesus is real to me. You can call Jesus an elephant. I don't care. It's just the idea of it is super important to me. But I found it fascinating when I was talking to my boyfriend and he just wasn't having it. The block was so strong with him because he keeps associating Jesus with religion. And we talked in previous podcasts that we did too. We had an issue, and it wasn't until we sort of opened our minds a little more.
To the Course.
To only the Course.
The last couple years.
And realizing the beauty of the concept of Jesus. Who cares if the Bible got it wrong? Who cares that, you know, people are like, oh, I'm a Jesus freak, because we kind of made fun of that in the past. It's no longer an issue for me. It is part of me. Jesus is part of me. And if somebody wants to get to know me, they're going to have to understand that.
I agree.
Jesus is like my, I'm going to say guardian. He's like my mentor, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, he's a teacher. And Gary was saying on the 24th Hour podcast, plugging you a lot, Jackie.
That's right.
Gary has two episodes on her web page, so you guys should check it out. But one of the things that Gary said is that Jesus was actually the ultimate follower. He listened to one voice. And it's because of that that he was able to awaken fully. I seek to only also listen to the one voice, but he's the example that we all see. And he is our salvation because he's the teacher that shows us this path.
And I can understand if somebody's coming from a non-Western perspective. Let's just say they're Indian and, you know, that maybe they resonate more to the Buddha. Same thing.
Yes.
Same thing. It's just different clothing.
And even though the Buddha didn't enlighten in that lifetime and it was the next one.
But he did. You know, so...
Well, he became aware, but he didn't actually transcend.
No, I mean, he also became enlightened. It just wasn't the same time period. Totally fine. You know, it was like the next lifetime, I think, that the Buddha... Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's like, whatever. I mean, splitting hairs. But I also love the concept of people in our lives that are actually enlightened that we wouldn't know. Like, there's a gentleman I worked with, Roderick, who I truly believe if he is not enlightened, he is... awakened for sure. I love being in his presence. I like talking to him. Like, I have made such an effort. We used to work together. He's left the company. It's been like over a year now, but I keep making an effort to continue to text him and include him in stuff and give him updates. And it's not altruistic. It's about me selfishly wanting to make sure that this very enlightened soul stays in my orbit.
That's cool.
I do not want to let that one go. It's just, even when I'm in situations where I'm not behaving in a way that I'm proud of, I try to think, what would Roderick do?
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
I think that's a good example.
That knowing him has been such a huge gift for me in this Janine lifetime. But it's interesting. He's very traditional Christian. He's very Bible-y. Goes to church all the time. So our, you know, our perspectives are a little different. Doesn't matter. I don't care.
Because at his essence, he's something else.
I know that that guy has light within him. And I think anybody around him can see it. He would do these amazing things, which I loved watching him in action. There were people, I work in a big company. We have these buildings where we have people at the front desk, security.
Different floors.
Right. And we would have like custodians or janitors and stuff. He would always, every day, say, "Hello, Bob, how are you doing today?" He took time and he made space for them. And at lunchtime, he would go and buy lunch and bring it over to these people who were just sitting there at the desk.
Wow.
"I wanted to give you some food."
That's pretty
This guy
kind.
Was amazing. It's just watching like, him.
What would Jesus do?
That's what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. Like, and I remember looking around going, "Hey, you seeing this? You guys need to see this." And the people I was working with, I kept saying, "Keep him in your life. You don't realize right now, but you need to keep him in your life." And they kind of have it, but it doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. I am.
He's touched yours.
Oh, 100%. I feel privileged being in his space.
That's cool.
Yeah, I just saw him a couple weeks ago. We had a party, a goodbye party for someone else, one of our kin who was leaving to relocate to Denver. And it was just, I don't know.
It was good to see him.
It was good to see him. And I know he was happy to see us. He was beaming. Mm. But he always does. I mean, he is as beatific as any human I've ever seen.
That's so cool.
I know. And he's my guy. I hired him. I remember him walking into my office, sitting down. And I was like, "You're hired."
Wow.
Yeah.
Where is he now?
He is getting his master's degree in psychology and counseling.
Wonderful.
So he's down in Irvine. And once he graduates in like 10 weeks, he's going to work as a counselor. So that's what he wants to do.
Is he into spiritual stuff? I mean, I know you said he goes
to
church.
He's religious.
But...
No, not in a new agey kind of way. Because I did tell him, because I would recommend books to him and he would love it and read them all. He's like, "This is fantastic." And he said, "Well, do you know any good books?" I said, "Absolutely. You've got to read Disappearance of the Universe." Yeah, that one didn't fly. Yeah, it's just
10 years
kind of,
from now, maybe.
You know, it's weird when you have, we read this book in graduate school. It's called Crack in the Cosmic Egg. And basically it talked about how we have these belief systems and then something will happen and it'll crack our belief system. And then it starts more fractures in our egg. And then all of a sudden the entire thing is cracked and you have a new belief system.
That's the course.
That is the course. Mm-hmm. But I think you have to wait for that crack to occur. For us, I think that crack was Disappearance of the Universe. Mm-hmm. And it basically fractured everything. At least for me. I don't know about you, but...
Yeah. It blew my mind. It made sense. But I think doing the workbook and reading the text and doing all the work is also another level of blowing my mind.
Yes.
Because practicing true forgiveness definitely takes some effort. You have to be conscious.
Yeah, I think we grokked it immediately. Like, okay, now I get it. It all felt like, okay, now I'm finally reading it. But you're right. It's actually applying it that's really the trick.
Mm-hmm. Remembering.
It's the constant remembering. And that's why we're kind of in it for the long haul.
Yeah, Gary said on one of those podcasts too about awakening happens over time. So time in a way is a gift. You know, we're not going to just come out and play the piano with Mozart. Like, it takes some practice. So it makes sense that it would take some practice applying ourselves to the course and practicing true forgiveness.
But we had talked before that we want as much time as possible in the Janine and Stephanie lifetimes so we can work through this forgiveness stuff so we don't have to come back again. So I see time as a massive gift. And some people are like, oh, I just want to die. I'm not. It's like, oh, no. No.
Yeah, no way. I don't want to go through
childhood. No. Yeah. I just want to work out whatever I need to work out. Whether it's this lifetime or the next lifetime, I don't know. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I want to fast track this stuff.
Yes.
I just can't imagine not having this in my life. Gary had said before, I think we were at a talk down in San Diego, and he had said, pretty much if you're coming to the course, you're probably toward the end of your lifetimes because it's getting to a point where you're recognizing that now I know what I need to do to get back to God. So I feel very happy to hear that because I kind of thirst for it. In a big way. Even though my ego still, oh my gosh, my ego is constantly kicking up dust for me, usually at work, but regardless. And how my ego really does convince me that I know everything and I'm the smartest person in the room, which I usually am. But anyway, you know what I mean? It's like, okay, hold on. I'm looking forward to the day where my ego just shuts the F up. Just shut up already.
I don't know if it ever will until we maybe leave the physical.
Probably. I don't know. I mean, Jesus didn't seem like he had that much of an ego.
But he was fully enlightened.
We're looking forward to Gary Renard's next book because he talks about how these spiritual masters became enlightened.
Yes.
What was their lifetime before that? Or a couple before that? Like, what did they experience? One of the things I really like about reading the stuff from Gary and Art and Persa is, you know, they weren't perfect. Persa had an issue at a university. It was her last kind of forgiveness lesson. Although it didn't sound like she did anything wrong. She still had to go through that where people were believing that she did. And that's really hard for me. I don't like it when I'm in a situation where somebody believes that I did something that I didn't.
And it's in the press.
Yeah. I mean, that must have been
really,
like,
really hard. Whoa. Imagine how crazy gossip is now with the TMZs and everything.
And then 100 years in the future, having it in the newspapers, it's kind of hard to escape something like that. It's just, to me, wow, fascinating that that happened to somebody who's so close to enlightenment.
And her biggest forgiveness lesson, I think, was that, right? Whereas Artin's was that she moved on.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I always thought Artin got off easy on that one. It's like, your biggest forgiveness lesson is that your spouse passed away? Okay. Don't we deal with those forgiveness lessons every time we're in body?
That's because it's Cindy, and Cindy's already enlightened.
That's true. We've talked about that before. I mean, to me, she's the most etheric person I've ever seen. Just light and airy, and it's almost like it's too much for me to be in her presence. I know that sounds ridiculous, but I see her, and I'm like, oh, hi. You know what I mean? Like, what exactly do you talk to? What exactly do you say to an angel on earth? Hey, what's up?
I just imagine cotton candy or something just really sweet and just like floating.
Right. Yeah. And like me, when I'm not cotton candy and nor do I float, it's like, well, I don't know what to say now. It's bizarre. I wouldn't say that I'm a disaster socially, but when I'm around Gary and Cindy, I am an absolute train wreck.
Gary's easy to be around because he's just so...
Yeah.
You know.
Gary just reminds me of, you know, a friend I would hang out with. Not that I would drink beer, but, you know, drinking beer and watching a football game and just like, oh, what's up?
Let's just hang and have fun. Right. Be in the moment.
Right. It's still mind-blowing that I know them. Mm-hmm. Very mind-blowing to me. It's even more mind-blowing that I didn't realize I knew them when I was reading Disappearance of the Universe.
Yes.
No clue. Whoa. But, you know, everything happens for a reason. It's in the script. So there's no point kind of like being, oh, okay, that's bizarre. Because it is what it is. Who came up with that at first? It is what it is.
No.
I say it a lot. I'm just going to claim it. For those of you who are saying it, that was me first.
Is that like, I am what I am?
I am what I am. That was Popeye, though. All right, Dreamers, I think we're to the end of our podcast. I want to thank you very much for hanging there. It's number 45. We'll be back with 46 in a couple weeks. And let us know on Facebook or on Twitter if you'd like us to tackle any issue or any idea that you would like us to talk about. We are more than happy to kind of do a back and forth question and answer session, which is ridiculous actually saying that out loud. Like, we have answers to anything, but we'll try.
I don't know the word experts, but a shout out to Chris who sent us a note on Facebook.
Thank you, Chris. Thank you very much for reaching out. We do appreciate it. Anytime we get any comments about the podcast, it makes our day. It seriously does. All right, Dreamers. Thanks again, and we will see you soon.
Good night.
Good night.